So here we are on Monday, May 9th. We've got two NBA playoff games tonight, and I've just been informed we are 12 days away from the Rapture.
That's it. May 21st.
Well, the Rapture came early for the Lakers, didn't it?
It sure did.
Out of the playoffs by the Dallas Mavericks.
Did not see that happening. I don't think anyone saw that.
Well, after game one, we podcasted. Yep. I predicted Mavs in six. You predicted Lakers in seven.
I did.
So I'm 1-0 there. Yes. You've got the Grizzlies winning that series. I don't remember how many games. I think six or seven.
Yeah.
I think six. I have the Thunder winning that series in seven games. Yep. So you still have time to make it up. We both had the Heat in six, and we both took, I think, the Bulls in seven.
Yeah.
Seven, was it? I think it was
so.
Seven. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we're going to talk about all four series. We're going to start with the ones that are tonight. That would be Thunder, Grizzlies, and Heat Celtics. And I'm Adam Azer with Greg Urbano. Your familiar voices all season long here on the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I don't know why. I'm very bored by the Bulls series.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean,
boring.
Derrick Rose puts on highlights every single game.
Not really.
Game he plays.
In fact,
highlights, yes.
Yeah, you know what? Because the entire game is his personal attempt at making a highlight reel. He's been awful. Other than game three. And game three was incredible.
He's been awful. Great basketball.
I have such an amazing stat. I can't wait to throw it out when we talk about that series.
I'm already looking forward to it.
Thunder Grizzlies. Memphis leads 2-1 here. Game four tonight, Monday night, 9:30 Eastern. 101-93 the score in game three. That was in overtime. What do you think?
Great game. Great game to watch there. And these two teams seem so well matched up. You know,
I know.
There's so many playoff series where, you know, if you look at Dallas and L.A., it's just the wrong matchup for L.A. They might not be that much worse than the Mavericks, but the way the Mavericks matched up with them was just completely within their favor.
I want more on that.
So for this series, Oklahoma City, you know, where's the edge? Who's really going to be that guy to stand out? You would have thought by this point, you know, three games in, that Kevin Durant would really, really stand out and show, okay, we're going to win this series because I'm the best player on the court. Right now, you know, it doesn't look that way. Russell Westbrook had a great game in game three, and they still lost there in overtime. Zach Randolph, of course, with 21-21. What's going to change this series other than it kind of being just a battle each and every night? It looks like it's going to go seven games. Chances are it will. What's going to break this series open? That's what I'm really looking for. There's one player that's got to stand out to me. It's got to be Kevin Durant finally taking that next step to say, you know what? I mean, I don't want to say he's Kobe now that we know, you know, the Lakers are on their downfall, but Kobe did this many times in the past where he simply took over a series, and it's Kevin Durant's time to do that.
All right, but he tried. He tried in game three in the fourth quarter there. Him and Russell Westbrook, they were just not good in the fourth quarter and in overtime. And I think that O.J. Mayo was the most important player. Everybody's talking about Tony Allen and the job he did on Kevin Durant. Well, O.J. Mayo was guarding Russell Westbrook, and he completely took Westbrook out of the offense. Westbrook had 12 assists going into the fourth quarter, and Royce Young pointed it out. He wrote a really, really good column about Russell Westbrook after the game, whose name I can't seem to pronounce today. But he had 12 assists going into the fourth quarter and 12 assists at the end of the game. So none in overtime, none in the fourth quarter. And Mayo was the reason for that. He kept them in front of him. And by playing so well on Westbrook, it actually ended up hurting Durant, because Durant really, every time Durant got the ball, it was just like some pass to him with 8 seconds left on the shot clock, maybe even less, around the three-point line. He didn't get any good looks because Westbrook couldn't break down the defense at all. So I think the Grizzlies' defense in the fourth quarter was so good. What I want to see from Scott Brooks is James Harden play more down the stretch instead of Cephalosha, because they really need the help offensively. That's going to be a big factor to me. I need to see more of James Harden. Somebody does have to step up. And as long as Tony Allen's guarding Kevin Durant, it might not be Durant. And if O.J. Mayo's guarding Russell Westbrook, it might not be Westbrook. Who's that third guy?
That's tough. You know, you look at the stats, you look at the box score for game three. O.J. Mayo in 42 minutes was a plus 23.
Yeah, and he shot poorly, right?
He did. He only shot 6 of 18, but, to be a plus 23 in those 42 minutes he was on the court. You know, you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, James Harden came off the bench. He was a minus 20 in the 25 minutes that he played. So,
right, but
essence,
I think it's a little deceiving because Cephalosha was giving them nothing offensively. Harden came in overtime, and he was really like the only guy who was able to get anything going offensively in overtime. He was able to get into the lane and dish off for, I think, one assist and one trip to the free throw line for another player. I can't really remember the exact specifics, but he needs to play because the Memphis Grizzlies, you talk about matchups, they are matching up very well defensively against the two best players on Oklahoma City.
They are. Kevin Durant, 24 shots, only one free throw attempt. You can't have that big of a discrepancy between the shots you take and the amount of times you get to the line. You shot 2 of 7 from downtown. And in essence, I think, you know, you looked at Kendrick Perkins, Serge Ibaka, the things they needed to do in the paint in that game, and they played great for about 3.5 quarters.
The whole
did
team
a great job. I mean, they really did.
Yeah, everybody played great for 3.5 quarters.
Both Gasol and Randolph, even though Randolph had 21 points, he shot only 8 of 22. Marc Gasol is 4 for 14. Ibaka and the big guys for Oklahoma City are doing what they need to do. It's time now for Kevin Durant to really step it up, have a game where he shoots well over 50%, gets to the line a lot, and just dominates the ball game here in Game 4.
I think whoever wins Game 4 wins the series. And you had, again, you had the Grizzlies. I have the Thunder in 7. And I think the Thunder still win because looking at Game 3, they outplayed them. It was just about 12 total minutes of horrible basketball if you include overtime. And I think they take Game 4. I think they take the series.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, they had 44 free throws in Game 3 for the Memphis Grizzlies compared to 23 for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They were the more aggressive team. Anytime you're a more aggressive team and you're at home, you're going to get more calls for the most part. You come out aggressive like that, it's tough to lose. So Oklahoma City really needs to get off to a good start in Game 4.
All right, can you make a prediction, please?
The prediction of Game 4 or for the series?
You still stay with the
Grizzlies? Yes, I've already predicted the series. I'm not going to change it now.
Heat-Celtics. Heat lead 2-1. Game 4 Monday night, 7 Eastern, 97-81 Boston in Game 3. Yeah. So I can't – first of all, I'm not too surprised that Boston won Game 3. But I can't imagine they're going to win Game 4 because I just don't expect anything from Rondo. And when Rondo came back in the game – how do the Heat still play so far off of him, and how do they not force him to go left when he's playing with one arm?
I don't understand. I really don't understand how you – exactly. Just get to his right side. Make him have to –
get up in his face.
He wouldn't even dribble the ball for the most part with that left hand.
Yeah.
He was playing just incredible basketball with one arm, but like you said, it's up to the opposing team to take advantage of that injury. Make him have to go to his left, as you said. Make him have to do things that he's uncomfortable doing with that injured arm. Now, you know, like you said, do you expect much out of Rondo in Game 4? No, but – we saw even when Rondo was out, when he was injured there in the late third quarter, they still played good basketball. They maintained and actually extended their lead. So that, you know, the energy, the really the rise that he gave his team by coming back in, it's going to carry over to Game 4. So if you see Boston here in this first quarter, and you know how Miami struggles in the first quarter, all season and in the postseason, if Boston comes out hot, gets off to a big lead in the first quarter, they could certainly win Game 4. If you see Miami stick with them for the first two quarters, three quarters,
but did Miami didn't Miami lead at halftime?
They did.
Led by 2?
They did.
Whatever it was. So the third quarter was really where that game got decided. But all right, here's the question. There's 3 questions for you. Did Chris Bosh have a good game in Game 3?
Are you kidding? Why do you even have to ask?
He was awful. Did Dwayne Wade have a good game in Game 3?
Good game? No. He had a decent game.
Yeah, whatever. Did LeBron James have a good game?
8 for 19. He certainly did not. 6 for 16.
Yeah, you know, they were okay.
Yes.
That's not going to happen again. At least one of them is going to have a big game.
You don't see back-to-back bad games for both or for the entire trio.
Exactly. Now, if Chris Bosh is a little bit scared of the bright lights and gets intimidated and gets nervous like he did in Game 3, then all bets are off. And Kevin Garnett was a monster, 18 rebounds. That's crazy. And they won the rebounding battle because of those 18 rebounds. They were more physical. They were more everything. The Celtics needed that game, and they came out and they got it. Now the Heat kind of settle in. I think they play much better in Game 4. I think they win Game 4. I'm thinking Heat in – we said Heat in 6, I think.
I'm thinking Heat in
5.
Really?
Yeah, because the Rondo injury, I think, is a total game changer. Yeah. I'd give the Celtics much more of a chance to at least go to 7 and win all their home games.
Yeah.
But not anymore. I feel badly for them that Rondo injury had to happen.
And see, that's the thing. I do think if Boston wins tonight, everyone's going to freak out as far as the Miami Heat, whether it's the fans or the media. They're going to freak out and say that the Heat
are
done.
You're going to freak out. You're going to blame
Spoelstra. No, because the fact of the matter is, you know, we talked at the end of the regular season how important it was for Miami not to get full home court advantage in the NBA playoffs, but to have the second round advantage over Boston was absolutely huge. All they have to do is win 4 home games. That's it. They don't need to win tonight. Hold it down at home, and they will advance. So that's really what the mind frame has to be, even if they slip up and lose Game 4. So up 2 home games and the home court advantage, obviously. So why not think that you can still win? This should not be, if they lose tonight, it should not be a confidence killer for the Miami Heat.
2 things I think the Heat need to do. One, start Joel Anthony.
Absolutely.
I don't know why Ogauskas plays. He's just awful.
At all.
Yeah.
At
he's
all. There's
so
not
bad.
One redeeming thing that he's really done so far in this series that I've seen. And when Joel Anthony had such a great first half in game three, why not bring him to start in the third quarter? You don't have to stick with the same five you started the game with. I don't know if Coach Spoelstra knows that or not. You can put
you
in Joel Anthony.
To?
You don't.
No. Wow.
That's the rumor. So, you know, yeah, I think, especially in the playoffs, when you have someone playing so well. For the first,
it's not that
24
he's playing
minutes.
So well.
Well
he's
I'm
just
saying for those
so
first 24 minutes in that
than,
game, start him in the third
yeah.
quarter.
Well, I think he's going to have to make
Don't
a change, and he hasn't publicly said it. But you know, you talked about the beginnings of the first quarter and how the Heat have been rough there. Okay, it was an easy way to fix that, and that's get Zydrunas Ilgauskas off the floor. He's doing nothing. That's number one. Number two is just get to the free throw line. How many free throws? They shot 19 free throws in Game 3, 32 in Game 1, 36 in game 2. Harder to get to the line when you're on the road, but you can still make a little bit more of an effort to go to the hoop. You know, it was just a bad game, and I still think the Heat are a lot better than the Celtics right now. A lot of that is because of the injuries. And listen, one more thing. We pretty much know, Shaq is not going to be a major difference maker. When he hurt himself after his first basket, you kind of said, all right,
as soon as you see him
realistically,
limbering,
what's he going to be able to do? He played 8 minutes.
Limping along down the floor after the first basket, you can tell he's not going to be effective. But as is, you know, a lot of returns and guys who come back from injury, it's just a motivating factor for the team.
Yeah, but
Boston
that's done
clearly kind of got a little bit of an energy boost. Like you said, if that carries over to game four, that's the big question right now.
All right, big game. Fired up for tonight. Some really, really big games. Bulls, Hawks, series even 2-2. Very surprising that Derrick Rose is playing this badly. Game 5, Tuesday night at 8 Eastern. And when Josh Smith plays this way, the Hawks are so much better.
Incredible. Just a stat filler. We've known that for a long time. He's always been a fantasy stud as far as the amount of categories he fills and the things that he does. He's always going to get you some steals and blocks. When he's assisting and passing the ball the way he was last night, he really is one of these unstoppable guys in the NBA. The athleticism, there was a play that he missed a layup, and he jumped back up and dunked it back home and fell
and
down on
fouled.
His back. Fell on
he
his
got
back.
Fouled by
they didn't
Dan.
Call a foul, but kept composure. Played simply a terrific basketball game. Like you said, when they get that sort of effort out of Josh Smith, they almost never lose. So at the same time, we know he's not the most consistent guy in the league. He's not going to do this night in and night out. But if you can get that from him 2-3 times in a series like this and then squeak a game out like they did in Chicago, you have a very good chance at upsetting the number one seed.
And what I thought was extremely impressive for Josh Smith was that he kept his cool in the fourth quarter, because taking away that three-point attempt that Derrick Rose pump-faked, got Jamal Crawford in the air, and then they called the inadvertent whistle, and then the referee later comes out and says, I blew it, I should have called a foul on the Hawks. Other than that play, I thought the Bulls actually got a lot of calls in the fourth quarter, and Josh Smith, particularly on that play you mentioned, when he got fouled, got pushed to the ground, he kept his cool.
He did.
And the Hawks could have blown up a couple of times, but they didn't. They kept their cool, and they won that game thanks to a really nice spurt at the end, 16-4 run in about the last little bit over 4 minutes of that game, and they won 188. Derrick Rose, I mean, it starts and ends with him. Are you ready for this awesome stat?
Let's get to it.
Well, first of all, Game 3 on Friday, he was awesome. Career-high 44 points. But horrible in Game 4, and pretty bad in the playoffs, in my opinion. So his shot attempts so far, Games 1 through 4, 27, 27, 27, 32.
Wow.
A lot of
Those
shot
are
attempts.
Kobe-like numbers.
Now, how many times did he shoot 27 or more shots in the regular season?
3.
11.
11.
I was a little surprised it was that much, but
still.
That's
a high number for a point guard.
Yeah, but that's 11 out of he played almost 80 games.
Yeah, he was pretty much healthy all year, yeah.
That's like 11 out of 80, let's say. How many what was their record in those games?
In those 11 games, I'm going to go maybe 3-8.
5-6.
Okay.
So they're basically a 500 team when he's
when
shooting
he
27
has to shoot.
Times.
It's the same thing with
But he doesn't have to shoot. He is such a ball hog.
Oh,
right now.
Don't say he's
no,
such
he
a
is.
Ball hog. You're
did you
say
watch
he's
it?
Such a ball hog.
He doesn't pass the damn ball. He takes horrible shots.
How many assists did he have in the game? I believe he had double digits, 10 assists. Now, to call him a ball hog.
He's
that,
a ball hog. Nah, fourth quarter, nah. Total ball hog. He did not pass the ball, Greg. He was awful.
You have
awful.
To think he's running the offense that's called by
no,
the head coach.
I don't think
he's
so.
Not just going out and saying, I'm taking it to the
no,
hoop
it was,
and tossing it up
truly
no matter what.
Selfish, disgraceful basketball.
Disgraceful.
And,
come
fact,
on. Now you're going
let's
overboard.
Ask the Bulls fans. Let's
overboard.
Ask the Bulls fans. As I went online and I read the Chicago Tribune article. They did a poll. Chicago Tribune had a poll online. Is Rose shooting too much? Over 1,000 votes when I voted.
Yes.
And I voted yes, by the way.
Of course.
62% of them said yes.
Is he shooting too much? Yes, I will agree with that. Is he being a ball hog? There's a complete,
yes, he is being a ball hog. And the fourth quarter is absolutely being a ball hog.
No, he's doing what he thinks is best for the offense, and that's
and he's
for him
wrong,
taking those shots.
Okay?
Well, then that's up to the head coach. That's
it
up
does
to the head coach to say,
yes,
move the ball around.
Yes, but Carlos Boozer actually had his first good game of this series, and he had Josh Smith on him. That's a mismatch right there. He can exploit
sure
that.
Is.
Give him the ball. Derrick Rose made it so easy to guard the Bulls because he was a one-man show. He made some really nice shots. He missed most of them.
He finishes at the rim maybe better
turnovers
than anyone I've ever seen.
Tough guy.
Three turnovers last game.
That's it.
That's it.
I think they all might have been in the fourth quarter.
They were. I don't know if all three of his. They were three late turnovers that they had. Two were definitely Derrick Rose. One coming out of a timeout. He throws the ball over the head of, I believe it was either Brewer or one of the other two guards.
There was a 24-second violation. Also, where he ended up with the ball. But
and then there was
really
another time where he's just, you know, crossover dribbling and just dribbles it off his foot. That way, and then Teague went off and stole it. There, you know, in the fourth quarter,
it was terrible, Greg.
Well, we've talked about the Chicago Bulls this season. They were plus 187 as far as points in the fourth quarter during the regular season. I remember, like, about 3 weeks towards the end of the regular season, we talked about this stat. They were at about plus 200 at that time. No one else was even at a plus 100. They were the most dominant team in the fourth quarter during the regular season. And then, of course, in this playoff game where they really need to step it up, in the last 4 minutes and 30 seconds,
I'm telling you exactly
they only scored four points. They
I'm
had three turnovers.
I keep telling you why. It was all Derrick Rose's fault. It was 90% Derrick Rose's fault.
Of course it's going to. And if they did the opposite.
But the shots weren't even good.
If they did the opposite and they dominated in the fourth, it would be his fault or it would be, you know, you would give him the credit
because
the ball is in his hand almost every single time.
Yeah, but he doesn't usually do this. He's being so selfish.
He doesn't usually do this. He won the MVP award for a reason. He's going to have a bad game here.
I don't mean he doesn't usually do this.
But he's playing selfish basketball. I disagree with that.
Oh, very selfish basketball. I'm not saying he doesn't usually do this, meaning he doesn't usually miss. I'm saying he doesn't usually take this many shots.
Yes.
I just told you 11 times in the regular season he shot 27 times or more. He's done it all four games against the Hawks.
Yeah.
Stop doing it. Larry Drew, by the way, Hawks head coach, nice job. Bigger starting lineup. He started Jason Collins. He put Marvin Williams on the bench. Marvin Williams is just like worthless, by the way. But
yeah.
Jason Collins, he didn't play that much. But when he did play, he made a difference. And Tom Thibodeau said, quote, "The tone of the game was set in the first quarter," end quote. So even though Drew went with a small lineup to end the game, what he did with his starting lineup, take notes, Eric Spoelstra.
Exactly what I was just going to say. I mean, why doesn't the Miami Heat head coach think about things like that?
Phil Jackson leaves getting swept for the first time in his career.
Wow.
And it was 122-86 as the Mavericks sweep the Lakers, just stunning. To see it all come down, and then the Odom ejection, which was bad enough, and then the Bynum ejection.
Terrible.
Which was awful.
Yeah.
Although Mike Tirico acted like he...
Like he shot the
held,
man.
Like he held up the entire stadium at gunpoint.
He did. He did. But terrible to see, you know, in any sport. You don't want this to happen. And I think Charles Barkley made a good point after the game. As soon as Odom threw that elbow to Dirk Nowitzki, I think they were up by like 24 or something at the time.
Yeah.
Get Dirk out of the game. You know this is kind of going to deteriorate into a situation like this. J.J. Barea, just being the type of player he's always been, hustling to the paint, trying to get an easy basket, just gets that elbow, forearm, shivered right to the underarm, and it's not something you ever want to see. Luckily, he came down on a shoulder. It looked like it could be a bad injury for Barea the way he came down. Luckily, he bounced back and was okay.
But listen, if you're ever going to do that, you got to take your shirt off.
I wanted to talk about that. I'm glad you brought that up.
I mean, that's, you know, it's a very tough move to do. Like, it's a tough guy move, you know?
It's
take
a
your
classless
shirt off. Yeah,
sort of like, I don't give a you-know-what about anything or anyone.
That's exactly
and I
what
hope
it is.
David Stern says, you don't care? Okay, well, how about the first 10 games next season? You sit
10.
Down. I don't see
I
why not.
Five. I think five.
Five's good. Ten is an excessive.
Five for the hit.
You're going to learn.
Five more for the
yes,
shirt.
Yes, the shirt. I'm telling you, why not? Why not? Just for doing that.
How good is Dallas?
Dallas might be the best team I've seen over the past five or six seasons just because of how complete they are. If you
look at the teams
that have won the championship in the last couple of years, they didn't have
oh my God.
All the
are
things.
You serious
I'm
right
giving
now?
Dallas respect, yes.
Are you serious?
This is one of the best
you
teams
are blowing this out of proportion.
I've seen.
In epic proportions.
Just the way that if you look at the buildup of this team, the makeup of this team, you've got a Hall of Fame point guard who's still playing very good basketball, shooting great from the outside. You've got a backup point guard who is really should be starting for probably 95% of the teams out there who can get to the lane at any time, sets up other great players.
Can we lower that percentage?
You've got probably...
There are at least 10 point guards better than him. So now you're not even talking about starting for 70% of the teams.
There are probably no better people coming off the bench as far as scoring right now in the league than Jason Terry. I mean, you've got Jamal Crawford, who's very good coming off the bench. Doesn't shoot that good a percentage compared to Terry. Obviously, Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, he was almost the forgotten man when Jason Terry starts hitting all these threes. Then you realize on their offense, wow, they just went back to Dirk in the post. They have so many ways to attack you. If we talked about the regular season, Tyson Chandler changed this team around. If they can just continue to play great on offense, I don't see any reason why they don't win the West.
I'm so mad at you right now.
Terrible matchup for the Miami Heat if the Heat get out of the East. So we'll see what can happen here.
They're a terrible matchup for the Heat?
Yeah.
Why?
Really, who on that team is going to guard Dirk? Do you want to throw
Chris Bosh at him? Come on, who on any
Chris
team can
Bosh
guard Dirk? Yes!
And that's even a mismatch.
That doesn't make them a bad matchup, because who's going to guard LeBron?
Really?
Sean Marion's going to guard LeBron.
A decent job
who's
of playing gonna their
guard,
zone
who's
defense.
Gonna, Jason Terry's going to guard Dwayne Wade? Are you kidding me?
Well, obviously, no one's going to be able to guard those guys.
Nobody's going to be able to guard Dirk.
One-on-one.
But doesn't make them a bad matchup.
The things that... You know, obviously, when Dirk gets double covered, when you rotate the ball as well as they do, when you pass the ball, and they're such
a
good passing team.
Urbano, relax.
Let's hear it.
They're playing great.
Yes,
they're playing great. Right now they're playing the best of any team.
Yes,
but they're still a jump shooting team. You can't expect them to go an entire series and shoot 46% from downtown like they did against the Lakers.
No, you're right.
And by the way, the Lakers are one of the best defensive teams guarding the three in the NBA. So they are red hot right now. Game two, they struggled. But games 1, 3, and 4 from downtown, they absolutely lit it up. Yeah. Mavericks are playing outstanding basketball.
I mean, I don't know that I've ever looked at a box score and seen 3-point made an attempt 20 and 32.
Okay, but here's the thing: it was mostly Jason Terry.
It was
the other guys actually didn't shoot
9 out of 20. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you're right to say they probably will win the West because they look like the favorites right now. But I could see them losing the next round to the Grizzlies or the Thunder. Because the Mavs still have the same holes that we thought they had when they came in. They're just playing great basketball right now. You're overreacting.
Typical of me, yes. Anytime I see a team play this well, I'm going to say, wow, this is absolutely incredible. I'm watching that game yesterday, just shot after shot that they would make. It was just incredible to watch. So certainly if they play at the level they played at, I don't see any reason why they don't win at all. But like you said, they're the Dallas Mavericks.
They got to come back down to earth here.
And at some point, the shots, you're going to have a bad night shooting. How do you respond to a bad night shooting? What do they turn to?
Yeah. So I just want to make one more point about Bynum. People are overreacting. It's not going to permanently stain his reputation.
Absolutely not. No.
In fact, I was watching SportsCenter earlier today, and they showed some other very violent hits, the Kevin McHale on Kurt Rambis thing, the Robert Horry hip check on Steve Nash.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of Robert Horry, you don't think about that hip check.
Think of clutch threes.
That's it. We're going to forget about this Bynum thing, okay?
Absolutely.
It's just relax. Okay? These types of things happen. There's always an incident. I will always point to this. People thought the demise of the NBA was coming after the brawl in Detroit.
You're right.
And that never happens. These types of things do not set basketball back at all. In fact, they probably are good for basketball. They create
more
rivalries.
Yep.
Next time he goes to play in Dallas next year,
you
know how crazy that's going to be? So let's not think that this is tarnishing.
No, it was a momentary, split-second, terrible decision.
It would be nice if he apologized, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Because he didn't. He's like, certainly I was frustrated that the littlest guy on the court's getting to the hoop at will.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then I took my shirt off.
Yeah, he's still very immature.
Yeah,
clearly
he's young
in his actions and in his words.
And I don't necessarily think the Lakers need to blow up their team.
I don't think so. I mean, clearly, until they got swept here, people still thought they had a shot at winning it all. If you look at the roster itself, I think obviously the small forward position is very tough with Ron Artest. He's in a longer contract with a pretty decent amount of money there still on the table. So trying to move him is going to be very difficult. Now, obviously, the obvious
thing.
I don't think
they have any tradable guys on their team.
Well, maybe Andrew Bynum. And then you look at who wants him.
His knees.
What sort of a deal can they make for whether it's one of these big guys? I mean, we talked obviously earlier the big names, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, and those are the ones that at the end of next season or even during next season when people are talking about do you trade them before the contract is up, those are going to be their options that are out there. But, as you've said, really, what other valuable pieces do they have to add to the mix? Is Orlando going to be content with, Andrew Bynum and two scraps? and maybe some first-round draft picks and say, well, we're not going to re-sign Dwight, so we'll take that.
No.
So, I mean, I think it's obviously also up to the players, Dwight and CP3, to tell their teams whether or not they're going to re-sign. If Dwight simply tells the Orlando general management, I'm not coming back, then they'll probably take, you know, a couple cents on the dollar just to at least get something in return and not have the same thing happen that happened with Shaquille O'Neal.
All right, any final thoughts?
Still a very exciting round here to watch. I think this Boston and Miami series with this Rondo injury is now even more exciting. There's more kind of like a legendary feel to this series. I think it's going to go down as a really good series.
Yeah.
I do think it's going to go seven games.
And why do we have to? These players get injured and then they come back.
No, this is not just a regular injury.
No, I mean,
the man's arm literally looked as if it broke.
I understand.
And I think, you know, I was at a sports bar at the time. Every single time a replay came on, it was, oh, and the entire restaurant was just going nuts. So, you know, when you think about him coming back and playing as well as he did, inspirational.
But the thing is, he really didn't play that well when he came back.
How do you figure?
He had that steal.
Extremely well. A great steal with an arm that literally was almost broken off.
I don't see why
you think he didn't. What did he not do?
Because he had that steal.
He
really didn't do anything.
He had a couple baskets. He had a couple nice passes with one arm.
Yeah, look, he played fine, but he didn't. But if you get that Rondo didn't have enough of an impact.
No, you're right.
He needs one arm.
It's not
He wasn't as good as he typically is.
Of course, how could he be with one arm?
Okay, and that's what I'm saying. If you have him, even if he's playing as best as he possibly can with one arm, he's not good enough for the Celtics
to win this series. I would agree with that.
All right, but let's hope I don't have to look at that replay anymore. This was really, really disgusting.
It was.
Phil Jackson, 20 seasons as an NBA head coach, went to the playoffs every single year. He won his conference 13 times. He won the NBA championship 11 times, and he three-peated twice with the Bulls, once with the Lakers.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's a Hall of Famer.
Is he the best or the second best coach ever?
That's tough. When you look at the talent, both coaches, we're talking about Red Auerbach, I would say, here in the argument, who had...
I was talking about Isaiah Thomas.
yes. You know, and he had Auerbach had one of the greatest big men of all time who just continued to win rings. And you look at, obviously, Phil Jackson, you went from one of the best two guards of all time to one of the best centers of all time who was also playing with one of the best two guards. So he had the talent to get the rings. Both coaches had the talent to get the rings. So to compare them... very difficult. Two different eras. Yeah. I think in the free agency era, it's more difficult to win. So
I agree.
It to Phil in that. You don't have Bill Russell on your team every year and not worry about him going elsewhere.
Yeah.
You actually had to re-sign him and maintain a roster that was kind of ever-evolving.
Yeah. Auerbach, of course, was the architect of those teams. But there were less teams in the NBA. People kind of forget that. A lot less teams, a lot less competition. You know what? I don't think you can really make the statement that one was better than the other.
Difficult. That's why I said the only difference I see is the free agency era versus the non-free agency era. So the guy who had more success and the amount, like you said, the percentage of times that he's not only getting to the playoffs but to the conference finals and then to the finals. Pretty staggering.
he won the championship in more than half of the years he coached.
Insane.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. Clearly the two best coaches in the history of basketball. And Phil Jackson will be coaching the Knicks next – not this upcoming season. Oh, watch. He's not done, man.
Oh, you're losing your mind.
I don't
think
he's done.
Yeah.
He used to play for the Knicks, you know.
I do know that, but...
and they were going to be able to afford
his
salary.
Why would he want to coach a team with
he's
a player...
take a year off.
...who is just a detriment to every coach that is around him?
Isn't that Kobe?
Well, no, not really.
No?
Now, how was he a detriment to Phil's career?
Phil Jackson hated him.
Yeah, of course he did, but guess what he did? He won.
You can still win with guys like that.
Other guy out there in New York hasn't won yet, so...
first of all, he's been around one coach. Carmelo.
Yeah.
Okay, now two. Okay, I think we're rambling. We have to go. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the games. See ya.